This is Jerry Pippin. We're wrapping up our first program on chemtrails with this final segment. We've been talking with Roxy Lopez and Michael Murphy, as well as Mark Candish. Mark, I want to bring Michael Murphy into the conversation here in a minute, but first of all, they just had a $35 billion contract for big super tankers from Boeing. We're talking about we don't have any money. Yeah, we can afford $35 billion for Boeing for these tankers when we already have big tankers. So I don't know what that's about. Maybe that's the way they continue chemtrail spraying. Who knows? Speaking of chemtrail spraying, is this expensive? It must be.
Well, not nearly as expensive as stockpiling and flying the planes around to disperse the levels of material that we're seeing in the atmosphere. I mean, it must be in the billions of dollars. I can't help wondering if something in this TARP funding, something in the funding that Ben Bernanke said he couldn't reveal, where the money went, that disappeared after these billions and billions of dollars were supposedly put up to bail out these different corporations. I can't help but wonder if some of those billions of dollars was actually being poured into this program. So, you know, obviously somebody thinks that this is a very big priority, and just exactly why that is, there doesn't seem to be any revelation of.
Mark, you're up in Northern California. Let's bring in someone from Southern California, from Los Angeles. Let's bring back Michael Murphy. Michael?
That's right. Mark, how are you? And it's my good friend Mark from Northern California. We've met before.
Hi, Mike.
Actually been on panels. How are you?
Great. It's great to hear you again.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for all your work in exposing this crime.
How about the money part, Michael? Did you get into that in your investigation when you made your documentary?
In terms of the film, no. And again, we could have made a film that lasted for about 20 hours, you know, and still not covered everything. So, again, our agenda was a two-point agenda. A, prove that these programs are real and are ongoing, and then B, prove that they're a threat to human health and ecology. And we conclusively did that, and as a result, we've woken up millions of people since our release just this past October. However, again, that opens up the door for some more questions that many people are asking me, and I think they're all valid and need to be covered. So perhaps, if the opportunity arises, we'll do a part two of What in the World Are They Spraying, where that question will definitely be addressed. And, God, Mark, I'd love to have you be a part of that project and interview you if I get the opportunity.
Well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate the offer, and I'd be happy to do so. I can print out the dozens of documents that I found that not only talk about the patents that are behind some of this stuff, which you also mentioned in the film, but also the different studies that look at the toxicity to animal life, plant life, to invertebrates in the soil. We have one researcher up here in Northern California, I think you included in the film, that was saying that in some areas of Northern California, in the mountains in particular, they're seeing as much as a 97% die-off of the invertebrates in the soil and in the water systems. And these are the very little bugs and critters that the fish and the frogs and everything live on just to sustain themselves in these aquatic systems. So it's very serious. I mean, they're having a dramatic effect on the local biosphere.
Yeah, it is. And one thing that you mentioned, the salmon run up in Northern California, my understanding is that it has declined by 94%. So there's just 4 or 6% of the salmon run. Now, Francis Mangles, who is a biologist and well aware of this, he's been doing a number of tests which reveal these toxins. And also, he did a test in a video that I did with him where we did test for bugs in a stream, and they had a decline. I believe it was it was over a 90% decline in the stream. And he said when he catches the rare fish that he does now and cuts open their bellies, he said there's nothing in their stomach. And he said the fish are literally starving to death. So
we're
in a serious crisis.
Well, it's true. I mean, you know, to have you know, one individual making such claims would be one thing, but if you go into the local fly and tackle shops and you talk to some of the people who are fishing enthusiasts around here, every person I've talked to a man, it says there aren't any fish. They're dead. They're gone. They're not around. I know one young lady that I see on a regular basis at the sandwich shop where I eat every day who said that and she's an avid fishing person, indicated that there were no fish up there in the lakes this summer. She couldn't catch anything. And to me, that's frightening. I mean, last summer we saw an article in a local newspaper saying that marine biologists up and down the coast of California are finding sea lions washing ashore that are starving to death, that they're having to pump you know, food and gruel and stuff into their stomachs just to keep them alive because there are no fish coming out of the streams that they can live on. In fact, they were having a problem with one, I think it was the Columbia River, where they're having sea lions that were swimming upstream looking for fish. And they were coming all the way up to some of the dams, the hydroelectric systems along the Columbia River in Oregon and Washington State. And the local wildlife service was debating whether or not to shoot them because they were interfering with the sports fishermen in the area. I mean, it's just, I mean, you can see that, you know, creatures who are accustomed to having a food resource in the local environment will adapt and move and migrate to try and survive, and they're going to places they've never been seen before.
Yes, and actually, Mark, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, a study that came out, I believe it was perhaps in May or June of this past year, that showed extremely high levels of aluminum in whales.
Yeah.
So this is not only affecting, you know, streams and wildlife and humans here on the mainland, but it also appears to be inhabiting the oceans and the sea life in the ocean.
Well, it's true, and of course, whales eat plankton, which includes microorganisms, both plant and animal microorganisms. You have zooplankton, which are little animals like baby shrimp and stuff, and you have phytoplankton, which are, of course, plants like algae and fungus and things like that. So, you know, if they're having, they're actually testing positive for higher levels of aluminum, it shows that this kind of activity, if not being conducted directly over the ocean, is eventually affecting the ocean because of the waters that's coming out of the watershed and the mountains and areas on land that eventually reach the ocean. So, to me, I think the consequences are going to be catastrophic over the long haul. And, you know, I think there should be some kind of an international conference with scientists and concerned citizens coming together demanding from the governments of the world, what in the devil are you doing?
What is going on? Of course, these entities are flat out denying that these programs have been started, simply saying that we're seeing normal contrails. However, the evidence, which there's a mountain of, certainly suggests much differently, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And, you know, I've been around aircraft all my life. I spent the better part of 30 years creating conceptual art for a number of defense contractors and aerospace companies in California and other parts of the country. I've worked on jet aircraft. I've got stick time in four or five different military fighters as part of the Air Force art program, media orientation rides and things. I've been around these kind of people. I've been around that kind of environment for most of my life. And so I can tell you that the kinds of, you know, these so-called contrails that persist are not, in fact, condensation trails. It's not moisture from the jet engines, you know, heat shocking the atmosphere and causing the moisture to sort of condense out. This is actually some kind of a chemical byproduct that's occurring in the combustion in these engines that are being that are using these nanoparticles, and it's having an influence on the environment. You know, a typical contrail, condensation trail, will last for maybe 30 seconds, 45 seconds, a minute tops, and then it dissipates. But these trails persist for sometimes hours, drifting for miles and miles. In fact, I've noticed, I have relatives living on the East Coast, that I notice that when we see a heavy chemtrail aerosol spraying campaign and geoengineering occurring here in Northern California, that within 5 to 6 days, my relatives on the East Coast and friends that I have in Illinois and other areas like that are seeing tremendously higher levels of precipitation. And in the wintertime, it comes down as snow and freezing rain. But they're seeing snow levels in Massachusetts that are comparable to some of the, 2-3 feet of snow that they saw back in the 1960s. It's unheard of.
Mark and Michael, I'm going to bring Roxy back into the conversation here. Roxy, Michael, as you just heard, was talking about, and so was Mark, about, casualties in the food chain. I mean, all kinds of animals dying and not getting proper food and aluminum poisoning and on and on. So we're just not talking about human casualties. Earlier we addressed this. Maybe we could get back to it a little bit, Roxy. Do you think these scientists, they know it. They just don't care.
The more I read into a lot of their own manuals and their own studies, the more I realize that, science is just, you could have hit the nail on the head. They're just so involved in their own world of weather modification in a number of different areas as far as what the research is. But every bit of studies that I read that they have, they always comment on, for instance, there's one right here that says only hygroscopic agents should be used that pose no environmental and health problems. So they continually bring that up as if it's a concern or it's on their minds. But then they go on for paragraphs and paragraphs in all of these studies to say what they have been working on, what's not working, and this has gone on for 50 years. I think that science has got its head wrapped in its own little world.
Michael, maybe you can identify with this statement. Since you're in the movie business, it seems like they've created their own Frankenstein.
Well, they have, and I want to bring the audience back to a quote by, again, geoengineer David Keith, who is considered to be the number three geoengineer in the world, and he was quoted as saying this: geoengineering gives man the power of God. I'm going to repeat that because it's kind of shocking. It said, geoengineering gives man the power of God. Well, I don't want somebody, a scientist, who gets paid hundreds of thousands of dollars or perhaps maybe even millions of dollars to have that kind of power because, again, there can be some terrible consequences and are some terrible consequences associated with the science.
Well, planetary engineering is not a new idea. I mean, one of my favorite science fiction writers when I was growing up, Robert A. Heinlein, wrote about planetary engineering, mainly about life on Mars and making the atmosphere more friendly to human beings and things like that. So it's not a new idea.
Well, it's not a new idea, and weather modification goes back actually for hundreds of years. There was a, back in Vietnam, the U.S. military flooded out the Ho Chi Minh Trail by using weather modification, and they dumped over 13 feet of rain in less than an hour. So they had, pretty powerful technology back then. Here we are several years later, and we can only wonder what kind of technology they have today. And what it appears, it's control. These people want the power of God. They literally want to control the planet. They're aggressively going after this. And then you throw in the thousands and thousands, I'm sorry, I should be saying billions and billions of dollars associated with these programs. You just have a recipe for disaster and corruption.
Yes, you do. Money always tweaks it, doesn't it? And there's a lot of money. You're absolutely right. Every study that I've been doing, they talk about millions and millions of dollars for just one small practice that they're doing that month or whatever. So where is all, that's another good question. Where is all this money coming from?
Well, I mean, some of it's coming from black budgets, secret agencies, but corporations, they have lots of research and development money. And so it's coming from there and various other places. Really, it's a kind of a perfect storm, don't you think, of financial interest?
I do. I really do. I, I know that Michael does as well. See, I also think, and I'm just going to throw this out there, I also think that, that if we move this forward, we open a case, we open the patents, we really put it to not only our representatives, people who are supposed to be representing the vote of the people, but bring it on. You know, if we really push this, this isn't just about geoengineering. This is, as you guys well know, this is a huge picture. This is all about how our money system works, how our food system works, how our quality of air, water works, our health programs work. This is all connected. And I think that in any area that we can open a case, I think that there'll be many other cases that'll be opened up in other areas. Not just geoengineering, not just biochemical warfare, not just, you know, there's just other individuals, other groups can open up cases as well. Because I think that this is such an elaborate, as Michael said, this is all about control. It's about control of everything. I mean, really, everything we do, our minds, our, the way we work, the way we practice, the way we eat, the way we spend our spare time. It's all so controlled, and it's just enough is enough.
Michael Murphy, do you have any closing comments?
Absolutely. What this is, it's man taking what was once under the authority of our creator, nature, and wanting to control the entire food supply, even the weather. So, you know, I'm just looking 10 years in the future, a nation perhaps is not signing on to this multi-governmental corporate conglomerate, which I call the Beast, who is rapidly going after the New World Order or One World Government, well, perhaps they could just send a drought over to that country and bring that country down to its knees. So that's the military application to these things, and it's deeply concerning. And I could just see, you know, 10 years into the future, if a country does not get rain, you know, we look at the past, hundreds of years ago, people would do dances, they would worship God and ask God for rain. Well, in 10 years, they're going to have to call up Raytheon, because Raytheon is going to have control of the weather, and that's what it is. It's a complete usurping of authority of what was once under the dominion in the nature of the dominion of nature, and now bringing it and corporatizing it. So it's pretty concerning. With that closing, What in the World Are They Spraying can be ordered at www.stopspraying.us. Again, www.stopspraying.us. You can also find clips and related articles on my blog, which is www.truthmediaproductions.blogspot.com. And again, I want to thank you and Roxy for addressing this, and Roxy, all the incredible work that you've been doing over the years. You certainly created a platform to which now millions are speaking on and bringing this to light. So thank you.
And Mark McCandish, how about you? Any closing comments?
Well, once again, Jerry, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really, really do appreciate your willingness to put this topic out there for the public's consideration. And, Mike, it's great to talk to you again. I can't tell you how much I admire your persistence and your tenacity in the work that you're doing, and I wish you all the best. Godspeed.
Well, thanks, Mark, and again, thanks for doing your part, and Jerry, your part in exposing this crime against nature and humanity. We're in a real vital time here, and it's just amazing to see the masses waking up, people around the world. So
it always helps when people look up and begin to notice things, particularly if it's bad for their health. I still would really like to know why some branch of the United States government seems to be supporting this operation, why they're doing it. It would certainly be a lot easier to sleep at night if I had some idea of what the reasons were. Mitigation of global warming because of a higher output on the part of the sun could be understandable, and I'd really like to know how they balance the equation, how they figured out what it was that made it worthwhile. With all the risks that we know there are, based on their own research papers you can find right on the Internet.
And Roxy, your final thoughts?
Well, I'm in the same thought with Mark and Michael both. I appreciate, the opportunity to be on your show, Jerry. You're always really good about this. And for the, you know, raising public awareness, et cetera. I have the same questions. I would like to know why they are doing this, and I really hope to continue to have open dialogue with both Mark and Michael. I certainly appreciate there are very many, there's just tons of areas that I just don't have the mindset that Mark or Michael have as well. So I really appreciate everybody.
We'll be back to do more.
Thank you, Jerry, so much.
Thank you. You take care.
And Mark, we appreciate you being on too. Let's close out the show, the first in a series of shows we're going to be doing this year on Chemtrails, with a little bit more of the soundtrack from Michael Murphy's What in the World Are They Spraying? Thanks for listening, everyone.
This is a multi-billion dollar, if not trillion dollar operation. It's also very damaging, not only to the environment, but also to human health.